But I trust my teammates. I trust my coaches. And let's go to work and see what today can bring.
Welcome to Hoop Nerds with Billy Kegler, presented by the Wisconsin Basketball Coaches Association. We talk to coaches, athletes, and more to learn from their stories and apply learning lessons to improve each individual and stimulate growth for your program, team, staff, and self. Follow along as we explore success and failure en route to improving the game of basketball.
Before we jump in today, I just wanted to give a quick shout out to my friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. I've been associated with their products for a few years now, and I'm really impressed by their innovative and user-friendly shooting machines. They also are great people with tremendous customer service. It's no wonder why they have become the preferred choice among top programs around the country and world. I'm very grateful for their support of the show. Make sure to check them out at drdishbasketball.com and at Dr. Dish B-Ball on social media. Be sure to mention WBCA when ordering your next Dr. Dish to save an extra $300 off any commercial purchase.
Coach Ryan, can you tell us about your start in coaching and a memory that you have from it that stuck with you throughout your career?
Well, I can tell you the first time I ever did anything that involved instruction with players in basketball, and it was when I was in college, when I was home for the holidays and home after the basketball season, I would help my dad coach his Biddy League team. Now, Biddy League is the little smaller ball up to 12 years old. The baskets are 8.5 feet high, and it's really big on the East Coast. But my dad asked me if I would help him, and so I did. It was a lot of fun, but I was an economics and marketing major. I was going to be a CEO of a major corporation. You know how that goes for business majors. So I did it just because I loved the game and I wanted to help my dad and help the kids, you know, learn more about the game and how it should be played. His team, they won the state championship in Pennsylvania, and they went to the Nationals. And that was kind of a nice feeling, knowing that you had a hand in that. So that always stuck in the back of my mind, and really what helped lead me into being a coach and being a teacher was having that experience with my dad, with young kids, having them be successful. And whether or not they won the state championship isn't the main factor, because it's not about the trophy. It's about the experience and the relationships that you develop. So that was the beginning, and it helped lead to when I graduated from college, I was drafted, and it wasn't by the NBA. It was by Uncle Sam. So I did 2 years as a military policeman, and then it was while I was in the service that I decided I wanted to coach and teach rather than be in business. And I had a job waiting for me. I had already signed a contract with ARCO, Atlantic Richfield, and they had the job waiting for me. And that was a tough phone call when I told them I decided I'm going to coach and teach. From there, junior high school was my first job. And then high school, small college, mid-major, and then Wisconsin. That's how I got into it.
Do you remember in your time in the military one specific thing that stuck with you which transitioned into coaching well and you were able to use that experience?
Well, I think the discipline, I think the other part is we were able to help a lot of people while in the military police. There were people who were struggling with desertion and AWOLs, and I had a chance to work with a lot of young guys who were really struggling with, especially ones that had been over in Nam and then came back. And I got to work with them somewhat in the stockade in a program that they put me in to help people go back to active duty, to get them to understand that you need to have an honorable discharge. You can disagree, you can agree to disagree, but here's what's going to be best for you in the long run. So it was about a path, it was about the discipline, it was about understanding there are certain things, certain basics, fundamentals that you have to do, not just in a sport, but in life. Those were my experiences while I was in the service. And then I realized, you know, this is pretty cool. I'm helping people. I'm helping people on their path, and I can do this as a teacher and a coach.
So helping people is a big component there, and one thing that I always try to communicate with people is be helpful, and that will pay it back to you. But in order for you to help people, they have to accept your help, and one element of that is trust. Can you talk a little bit about how you are able to gain the trust of your players so that you are able to help them?
Well, I think if you make sure you get them to understand your vision, there's so many coaches I know who know thousands of X's and O's, and for some reason can't communicate those or get those across to their team. So still that whole concept of keep it simple works from the standpoint of, you know, they have to believe that you're not going to come to practice and try to teach them something different tomorrow. That they're on a building block type of program where from day to day you get reinforced with the basics, the fundamentals, and then based on your ability levels, and all teams are different, all individuals are different, try to see how far you can take it. I just think that when you say about trust, with they've got to believe, number one, that you don't have favorites. You can't have, quite a matter of fact, as my coach taught me, who I played for in high school and college, couldn't figure out why he was so tough on me. Well, I was the point guard and the captain, and that's just the way it was. And if the players saw that he was treating me like that, not anything harsh, but tough love. That, I think, as long as there's no cliques on the team, and I'm never, people are different. People hang out differently. People do, you know, I've never tried to overuse the phrase of a family. We are a family. We're going through things together. We're spending a lot of time together. Let's face it, coaches and players spend more time talking and interacting with each other than when we were players than we did with our parents. That's a lot of time together with the travel and everything else. So trust has a lot to do with making sure you understand that tomorrow is going to be a good day. Tomorrow's going to be a good day, no matter how practice goes or whatever. But I trust my teammates. I trust my coaches. And let's go to work and see what today can bring.
So you mentioned there being consistent and, like, tomorrow something different isn't going to happen, and then the player has to react differently. And that may be very true short-term.
Well, they can – yeah, I'm not saying that something doesn't act, because, you know, you can put them into a pressure cooking drill. I mean, you can do something to get them to react in a way that maybe, because in basketball, you're going to have games sometimes where situations come up that you don't always prepare for. But what you can help prepare for is to handle nuances or something a little out of the ordinary, with the idea that, hey, we got this. My teammates will help me, and I'm going to help them. So, yeah, I don't mean that we don't do things differently. But it's how you get people to handle those situations.
So I'm curious then, over the course of your career, you may have had like a way to handle certain situations, or maybe from an X and O standpoint, a way to do certain things early, but then you transitioned over time because you were given new information. What's an idea or a theory that you had that changed over the course of your career?
Well, that's pretty easy to understand if you look at my background growing up in Chester, Pennsylvania, where coaches like Jack Ramsey and Jack McKinney, for the older people who would be listening to this, and if not, you can always Google those names, but they were pressure coaches, Diamond and One, you know, which is a 1-2-1-1 press. The high school that I played on, we used pressure a lot, so I learned that from my coach. But then when we went to college with the same coach, we did not pressure as much. And I found out why later. You know, you have to be realistic. So when we pressured, when I coached in high school, I had about 12 to 15 guys who were all about the same size. They had never won. They had never been to the state tournament. And so what we built with our pressure was guys were so similar in their abilities that I could keep running guys in and out. And we tried to tire out the other teams. We tried to wear them down. And we ended up making the state tournament. So I felt good about that, the pressure. Okay, so then I go on to be an assistant. And then I said, well, what am I going to do when I become a head coach? Pressure, pressure. So at Platteville, boom, we put in the Diamond and One. Our 1991 team averaged almost 98 points a game. That was with Robbie Jeter and T.J. Van Wee, Brian Gilmore, and a lot of other names that I could mention. But we were better than most teams athletically, and we were deep. So therefore, I could do that at Platteville. As things started to change, being at a non-scholarship school, Division IIs started recruiting a lot of the same players that we were getting at, say, La Crosse, Platteville, Whitewater. They were starting to go to the Division II and smaller Division I schools, North Dakota State, North Dakota at that time, South Dakota, et cetera. We started backing off of our pressure. And, of course, while I was at Platteville, the three-point shot came in. So when we would pressure in high school, if somebody came down and took a 28-footer, that's exactly what we wanted because the three-point line wasn't in. So then as you coach and then they put the three-point line in, well, in transition, you better get back and not leave those long jump shots open that you used to feel were the kind of shots you wanted the other team to take. So you better cover the shooters. So philosophy-wise, I had to say, all right, are we going to do one of two things. We're either going to show pressure and then go. I call it the show and go. Just to kind of disrupt and to give them something different to plan for the other team. Or are we just going to get back and get into our half-court defense? So as in at Platteville, there were too many teams in the state league that had overall could probably beat us in foot race. So what we tried to do was say, all right, what's going to be best for us? We need to make sure we get back, play defense on the half-court level using what I learned from Bobby Knight was the 5-versus-3 theory. Everything that we did defensively was based on trying to have five guys guard three guys at one time, which has helped, which is, you know, helps our defense, rotations, things like that. So I changed, and then going to from Platteville to Wisconsin and Milwaukee was the idea that we're not going to out athletic a lot of these teams. And the main thing is get back, don't give up open threes. Too many guys are such good shooters from beyond the line. So that's why I changed. That's why I changed from being a pressure defensive coach to half court, 5-versus-3 theory.
I think that's a great thing to look at is to work with what you have. I always talk to people about everyone now wants to run 5-out motion, dribble drive, but if you don't have players who can dribble and pass, that's going to be an issue because the dribble part is a key component of that. I really appreciate you sharing that, those stories and those examples of that. Now I want to talk a little bit about maybe outside of X and O's and maybe as a program and developing your players into accomplishing what they want. Can you tell me a little bit about something that you did in your program that you think made the biggest impact for your players in their growth and their development outside of basketball?
Outside of basketball, I'm like Steve Stricker. I don't bring in outside speakers to talk to my team just like he didn't. The thing to me, when you ask what is the biggest thing outside of basketball, meaning on the court with the basketball, what I decided to do when I went to Platteville from being an assistant at Wisconsin in 1984 was conditioning program. Had nothing to do with the ball because we weren't allowed to use the ball in September and halfway through October. You couldn't coach, you couldn't teach anything on the floor. But here's the thing. If you're in shape and you feel good about yourself physically, you're going to feel good about yourself mentally. So therefore, why shouldn't your team? It doesn't take talent to be in shape. It doesn't. You don't have to jump high, run fast to be in the best conditioning that you can. So I put in a class which was open to any student, and we had other students at Platteville take the class. And because it didn't involve the basketball, it was a conditioning class. So we would weight train, go from the weight training room to the hill. And that hill, to me, was one of the biggest parts of our program because it was the beginning of when you come back to school. It's the beginning of another year. So, and the hill we had at Platteville was harder than the one we had at Milwaukee and harder than the one we had in Madison at Elver Park. But the guys feeling good about where they are physically goes a long way in how you play a game. If you're prepared, you tend to play better. So why not be the best conditioned team? And I'm not the one saying it. I'm just saying what people always said to me was how our guys never got outworked, out-conditioned. And as a coach and the coaching staff, we were very proud of that because we had guys who were willing to commit to that extra work that it takes to be in tip-top shape.
Sideline Interactive delivers digital and LED scoring tables and video boards that generate excitement in your gym and the ultimate game day experience for your players and fans. We provide you the blueprint and the game plan to generate $10,000 or more in sponsorship revenue every year. 95% of our schools generate enough advertising dollars during the first school year to pay for their purchase. Any school or college can qualify for no fee, no interest financing over two school years. We're ready and able to deliver your order to you within 3 to 4 weeks. The tables and boards can be used for any indoor sport, as well as watching game film, school assemblies, signing days, or any other event that is held in your gym. Visit sidelineinteractive.com or call 832-786-0302 to schedule a 15 to 30 minute live web demo to see our tables and boards in action and what these fantastic products can do for you. Or email sales@sidelineinteractive.com. A link to sidelineinteractive.com is in the show notes for today's episode.
As many listeners know, I spent over 6 years as a general manager at Just the Game Fieldhouse in Wisconsin Dells. I was able to spend time talking hoops with coaches like Tom Izzo, along with high school and youth coaches, in addition to meeting some basketball legends, including my childhood favorite, Sam Elke, who is in the WBCA Hall of Fame and High School Basketball Museum, located at Just the Game Fieldhouse, which is a must-visit for any true hoop nerd. They also play host to the WBCA All-Star Games and Coaches Clinic every year. Just the Game hosts over 70 basketball and volleyball tournaments annually and is a great place to play for teams of all ages and ability levels. You can't beat all Wisconsin Dells has to offer in your free time. The Fieldhouse also has two sister companies in Just the Game Impressions and Just the Game Live. Just the Game Impressions specializes in customized screen printing and embroidery and promotional products. They serve businesses, schools, sports teams, and more. Just the Game Live takes pride in providing affordable and simple live streaming solutions for venues or programs of all kinds. Inquire today for more information. For more info on everything Just the Game has to offer, check them out at justthegamefieldhouse.com.
The other part about the hill, team building. Guys would help. Every day that we ran the hill twice a week, that was for 6 weeks, and we'd increase it each time. When you come back, for college basketball players, they'll know exactly what I'm referring to here. Some people had jobs in the summer. Some people didn't have a chance to work out as much as others. And for me, I know it's one of the reasons I didn't have any student debt was because in the summers I worked the job, you know, 8 to 10 hours a day to make sure, you know, that I didn't have a big debt. And if you have that, sometimes you're not playing ball as much. You're not maybe in the same shape or, you know, so, but when you come back, my theory was not try to give them a test and say, okay, can you run 5 miles in under this? Or can you do X number of line drills in X number of seconds? No, what we did was we started low and built high. And it gave everybody who had different things during the summer coming back the same footing, basically, to start out on the conditioning. So some guys being in better shape, they would help the other guys who were struggling some days. And it was really neat to see the team dynamics that developed during our hill running. It brought the team closer together. It set the tone for what was coming. So when we hit the floor, October 15th was usually the first day. Now it differs at times. But when we hit the floor, I didn't have to worry about guys being in shape. What we had to do was now mesh all the talents and abilities and every asset that every player could bring, put those all together, and start getting better with the game, with our cuts, with our reads. So the old saying of fatigue makes cowards of us all is so true. And I think the biggest thing that we did was put in probably, if not the toughest, one of the toughest conditioning programs in the country, especially for a Division III program. But when you think about the Boston Celtics, people always talk about Russell. They talk about Cousy. They talk about all these players they had back in the 50s, 60s. And they were the best conditioned team in the NBA. There's a book where I saw something on Red Auerbach's conditioning program. Basically, it was run and then run some more. And then run a little more. He didn't use hills or anything, but what he did was he conditioned his players. They were always the best conditioned team on the court. And growing up in Philly, I didn't like that because they would beat the once the Philadelphia Warriors, then they became, and the next team that came in were Philadelphia 76ers. But Boston would always out-condition Philly, New York, Baltimore, all those teams from the past. So to me, conditioning, the biggest asset that we had going.
I love that because it's preparation, and there's so many more aspects within that you talked about and you broke down very well there. Thank you very much for doing that. Now,
Billy, I forgot to mention that we would go and we'd hit the pool, the swimming pool, after the hill. Because I was told how effective that was for getting the acids out of your body. It definitely worked for us. So it was weightlifting, hill, and then swimming.
So that was part of your preseason routine, and you did have repetition with that. So I want to ask you a little bit about something that I hear a lot of younger people say that these days is they're bored, right? They don't like to do the same thing over and over again, which is routine and repetition, which helps build the memory muscle that they need. So if anybody had come to one of your practices, there's a lot of routine and repetition. How do you counteract a player's quote-unquote boredom when you're trying to implement the routine and repetition to build skill for them?
I've never had a player say they were bored. The competitiveness in each drill, if it isn't in trying to get to a certain number, if it isn't trying to get to, it's all about the footwork. And all you have to do is, in this day and age with how easy it is to have video, is you show young people, okay, here is the end product. This is what you'll be able to do if you do these things, these fundamental things. So every practice that I had for 40 years, 30 some as a head coach, is partner passing. If you can't pass and you can't catch, you can't play basketball. And there's so many aspects to passing and catching with hand targets, with how you position your body, how you post people up, how you give the hand target. Those little things, the players always call me later and say, hey, coach, I'm a high school coach now. Guess what I started practice with? I said, oh, partner passing? They said, yeah. So if you're fundamentally sound, that's the beginning. That's the foundation for being a better player that helps your team be a better team. So why wouldn't you do some things that are routine that we do on the road, we do at home. The things that we did that seemed like routine to high school coaches that would come to our practices were all things that were built into becoming a better player and a better overall team. So, and it creates success. When have you ever been bored with success? I don't know anybody that's been bored with success. Do you, Billy?
I don't, and I think that's a great way to kind of parallel it together. And also, you mentioned at the beginning competitiveness and with the video, so you can show them how they're improving and competing with themselves to improve, and I think that's really important.
No question. Video is a great teacher when used properly. Sometimes you want to get good points across and pat guys on the back, and other times you want to show them, look, this hurts the team. What you're doing here hurts the team. Rather than yell at the person that didn't do it correctly, you kind of point out how it hurt the team. And too many guys try to make it personal, and sometimes players take it personal when they shouldn't, because it's a teaching point for everybody else. When you single out a player not getting back on defense, the whole team better be watching. And I know a lot of guys that say, oh, coach, I saw what happened though on this with the teaching clips. And boy, I need to think about that more. I need to make sure I don't do that. Well, success. The point was given. The point was taken. And then they pass it on to the other guys.
A little bit more lighthearted and kind of hypothetical question here. So if you could choose one player over the course of your coaching career to take the last shot to win a game, which player would that be and why?
The player that it would be the player that's open. that's the plain and simple answer. Now, for people that might be listening to this and looking for an answer, if I give some of the modern day or more when I coached at Wisconsin, there would be people that could maybe recognize the names. But believe me, there's a lot of guys that I coached at Platteville, even some guys at UWM. High school as a head coach, go-to guys. But let's face it, at Wisconsin, we had several guys that hit not just one big shot, but hit shots that maybe you don't quite remember as well because it maybe puts you into overtime or puts you up to where the other team didn't have enough time to beat you. And it wasn't necessarily a buzzer beater. But I'll tell you who those guys were. Devin Harris, for sure. When you get the ball in his hands, he's going to make something happen. And it isn't always because he takes the shot. Freddie Owens is another one I'm going to mention, and it's because of his shot against Tulsa when we came back from 13 down with under 2 minutes to go. It was Devin that drew the help and kicked it to Freddie, and Freddie Owens hits the three, and we go on to the Sweet 16. But also Jordan Taylor, many tough situations, and I'd want him to take the shot if he could, but sometimes the guy who you want to take the shot draws a double team and they need to find somebody else. I'm pretty sure, I'm trying to remember if it was Jordan Taylor that got double teamed and then he kicked to Josh Gosser when he was a freshman, and Gosser hit the big three against Michigan, at Michigan, for us to win the game. So if you're talking about take the shot or put the ball in their hands, I'm trying to give you both here. Cam Taylor also. Cam Taylor hit some really big jumpers, really big buckets during the course of his career. Trevon Hughes, Pop, as we called him. Trevon Hughes, 3-4 times at least where he made a play, and Florida State sticks out more than probably any of them. Virginia Tech, he hits a runner to win a game. You know, Trevon Hughes, who, by the way, just took a high school job.
Yeah, Kettle Moraine, so, congratulations to him, and he'll be doing that partner passing on day one, won't he?
He's already called me, and I'm going to get back to him here. We're going to discuss a few drills, but I'm so happy for him. You know, 11 years, 10, 11 years he played professionally. good for him. You know, a lot, that's tough to do playing overseas year in, year out. Trey Jackson, I mean, the 1 year there, he had like at least three or four where the shot came down to the last, you know, the shot clock and the last possession that he hit. And, you know, he was strong with the ball. He was confident. Well, all these guys were. And then Ben Brust, he never saw a shot he didn't like because he felt he could make any shot. So there's nothing wrong with that as long as you can deliver. And he delivered over the years. And then, of course, after, you know, Bronson Caney hit a few, and I can mention a few more. I know Sam Decker, people remember, but he only played for us for 3 years. I needed that other year out of him.
You could go on for days with guys back and forth, and I'll just say I'm going to take Jordan Taylor. I'm just going to take one, and I feel like Jordan Taylor was the guy who just had this supreme confidence, but also the strength and ability to kind of get a shot off from anywhere. He was kind of the first player who I remember extending range beyond the three-point line and just thinking, wow, he's really shooting that and having no fear about it.
Yeah, no, there's just certain people that earn the trust of the coaching staff to be able to shoot from longer distances, but it's something that's earned in practice. And it's something that's earned by having teammates believe that you can do. All those names I mentioned, people believe that they could hit big shots.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a huge part of it, and it goes into practice. All right, Coach, I want to finish up with a little bit more of a hypothetical, maybe non-basketball-related question here for you. So normally I say this with dinner, but since we've talked about golf a bit off-air, if you could go golfing and have conversation with one person in your life who you've never met, who would that person be and why?
Well, you prefaced it with somebody that I never met. But, you know, the realistic answer in my mind, dinner or golf or both, would be with family and friends, because how often do we say, hey, next time we got to get together, we got to have dinner. We have, and we say that to our friends or our family, and we don't even get to do that because we become so busy in our lives that we don't even fulfill the wishes that we have when we're around family and friends. So I've never been one of those that ever got excited about celebrity with things like that. So I really couldn't give you an answer or one person or anything else, but I think When I look back, there's so many times I wish I would have had that dinner, and especially now that I'm getting older, that friends of mine are passing away and family members are passing away, that, you know, hey, why didn't I have dinner with them, or why didn't we go spend 3 days at such and such? I don't dream a lot about being around a celebrity or having dinner or golf with them. I just wish I could fulfill the promises that we make and that I make with family and friends to spend more time with.
Beautifully said, and that puts things into perspective too. Also appreciate what we have right in front of us. Coach Ryan, thank you for the time, and thank you for coming on the Hoop Nerds podcast.
Billy, it was my pleasure, and I really appreciate getting a chance to talk to somebody who played in the WEAC.
Coach Ryan shared with us how helping others impacted his life as a coach. And we need your help. Please rate and leave a review on your podcast platform so we continue to grow Hoop Nerds and improve the game of basketball.